With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Silver and Black Pridecast. As always, this is Levi Damian, and I'm here today with the one and only Tyler Smith. How's it going, Tyler? How was your Valentine's Day?
It's going great. Valentine's Day was fantastic, as usual.
Well, that's good to hear. I hope everyone else out there had a wonderful and loving Valentine's Day. And if not, who cares? You know, it's just another day. You can celebrate. You can find other days to enjoy yourself and your loved ones. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the Raiders, who had a pretty eventful offseason. They hired a new general manager. They have $70 million to spend under the cap. They have five high draft picks, four in the top 35. It's an off-season of hope, as they like to say. And with that, we decided it's time, well overdue, in fact, to do another mailbag podcast. So we sent out the call for you to ask your questions. And as usual, you guys stepped up and asked some pretty phenomenal questions. So we're going to do just as we did before. We're going to bang those out alternately. And I will ask Tyler the first question. So, Tyler, JPepper13 asks, do you hate the mock draft of Rashawn Gary to the Raiders at four as much as the rest of us do?
I really do. And I hate it for this reason, and I'll elaborate on that. The fact that this is a three-player draft, essentially, and the Raiders had the fourth pick, which is possibly the worst pick they could possibly have in this draft, because the value is at 1 through 3, and then the value is at essentially 15 through 30. Four is not the place you want to be. The Raiders failed so hard this season, they failed to get a top three pick. The best players in this draft are obviously Nick Bosa, Quinnen Williams, and Josh Allen. There's no real question about that. Four is where you would want to take a quarterback. And the Raiders don't need a quarterback as far as I'm concerned. So four, they're just slotting people to us in these mock drafts that the Raiders really shouldn't be taking it for, and shouldn't even be slotted at four to anybody. If the Raiders don't get one of those three players I mentioned it for, they should absolutely trade down. I don't think there's any question about that. Four should be where someone like Dwayne Haskins goes, or someone like Daniel Jones, or someone wants to trade up for him. Those are the types of players who should be going in four. Rashawn Gary is the guy who should be going in 8 or 9, and that's fine. Rashawn Gary wasn't the most productive guy in college, although he's an absolute physical marvel. He's a freak. He's a beast. He's an animal. He's going to do well in the NFL, but he's not going to do well enough where you should consider him at pick four. And if the Raiders stay at four, I think if they're going to stay at four and take a defender, they should take Cleveland Farrell there. I think he's the only defender that comes even close to being considered for the fourth spot. So I really don't like the pick of Rashawn Gary there on a lot of mock drafts that even I've seen.
All right, fair enough.
All right, the next question here is for you, Levi. And Raider Old Timer asks, do you feel the Raiders should take a shot at Kyler Murray? Is he worth the gamble?
Well, first of all, I don't think he's a gamble in general, but I don't think the Raiders would take him. And it has nothing to do with Murray. He's a fine quarterback, and I think he'll do well in the NFL. I mean, if anything, guys like Russell Wilson proved a few years back that the height thing is for a quarterback is pretty overrated. I think it's just a way that they try to go about eliminating quarterbacks and trying to find the perfect specimen, and that just doesn't always work out that way. I would be interested, before I go on to anything else, I mean, you had mentioned guys like Dwayne Haskins and stuff. What is your opinion of Kyler Murray as a prospect?
Well, when you look at Kyler Murray, you see a guy who reminds you of Russell Wilson. He can run really fast. He can throw the ball really, really well. He's fairly accurate. The problem Kyler Murray has is he's 5'9", and that's just not going to impress too many people. People can use Wilson as a comp, but in my opinion, the better comp is actually Doug Flutie. Doug Flutie had a really good arm. Doug Flutie was accurate, and Doug Flutie could run, and Doug Flutie was short. And Doug Flutie had a long, long football career in the CFL. And that's fine. You can make a good living doing that. I'm not sure Kyler Murray is going to have the kind of success in the NFL that he had at the Big 12. And I'm just not sure he's a top 10 prospect. I like him a lot. I think he's a fantastic player. But I just think his lack of fight is going to hamper him quite a bit.
Well, I think it's a good thing that there are people that get paid a lot of money to make those decisions, and it's not me. Because you don't often see guys that are as short as he is. I mentioned that I think it's overrated, the height thing, but 5'9 is quite short. I mean, that's short for a running back. So who really knows? Really what it comes down to, is the first part of that question is whether the Raiders should take a shot at him. And I don't think they should take Murray because I see them giving Derek Carr another year to try and prove that he can get the system down well enough to play outside of it. And that means improvising when things don't go as planned and taking shots down the field like we saw him do in 2016. We haven't seen him do the last couple of years so much. And mostly last year when he did a lot of checking down. People like to call on the fact that he went over 4,000 yards for the first time. But, he would have done that in 2016 while at the same time taking shots down the field. So that's what you really want from him because you want those wins to go along with the numbers. And you can make the argument that they should draft Murray if you'd like. If Carr doesn't work out, they'd have their future supposedly waiting in the wings. But if Carr doesn't work out, there are a couple of great quarterbacks in the next draft as well that look a lot better than the quarterbacks in this one. Would you give a chance to take one of them because you already have Murray? Or if Carr does work out, then you have a guy you took at fourth overall just kind of wasting away on the bench when you could have drafted a player who could step in and contribute from day one. It just doesn't seem like a wise strategy to me. Now, if by some chance Gruden shocked the world, which wouldn't be the first time, and traded Carr away, that would be a different story. All I can do at this point is go by what he said in the past and assume that he's going to take a more patient approach for once, maybe. All right, so moving on. So for you, Raider Fan 35 asks, who should be a target if the Raiders trade down? And I'd also like to know more about Devin White. Seems overhyped.
Well, I think the two guys I mentioned in the first question, Cleveland Farrell and Rashawn Gary, those should be the primary targets if the Raiders trade down. And I don't see a whole lot of other guys that are in that, I would say, 7 to 15 area, besides perhaps cornerback Greedy Williams from LSU. He would also be an option there if the Raiders wanted to bulk up the secondary a bit. But I think Gary and Farrell are the edge rushers that the Raiders are going to need to basically replace almost no production from the defensive end position. I think those are both two pretty blue-chip guys who you would want between picks 8 and 12, 8 and 13, that would really, really be what the doctor ordered for the Raiders. They can get some good pressure off the edge. Rashawn Gary can even go inside the defensive tackle in a pinch. And Farrell is just a pure beast edge rusher. I really, really love him. I mean, people saw what he did in the national championship game against Alabama. They're basically dominating the Alabama offensive line. But he was doing that all season, and he's been doing that his entire college career at Clemson. I've watched probably over a dozen of Clemson games during Farrell's time there, and he's impressed in every single one of them. So that's the main guy that I would consider the Raiders drafting if they were to trade down, for sure. As far as Devin White goes, he might be a little overhyped just because he seems to eschew contact and not really want to get in there sometimes, but you're not going to find a guy with better measurables than Devin White. You're not going to find a guy who looks the part more than Devin White. He absolutely makes an impact on the game. He's a good tackler. He's got good lateral speed and quickness. He can cover a little bit. At middle linebacker, that's the type of player that you want. And he can fit any scheme, I think. He's got the ability to do that. I think he can fit Paul Gunther's double A-gap scheme. If the Raiders wanted to pick him up, that would be perfectly fine by me. The Raiders don't really have a long-term solution at the middle linebacker position. I like Markell Lee a lot, but I don't necessarily see him as the guy. I think he's a guy. But I think Devin White, if he lives up to his potential, can be the guy. So I like him a lot. He might just be overhyped from the name Devin White as far as being above the production of the actual Devin White in real life. But I think he can grow into something that you'd be really, really happy to have in your organization. All right, looks like the next question is for you, Levi. And JPepper13 with a second question today asks, what are your thoughts about the combine? I'm almost at the point of wishing that we never go to it because I'm tired of getting the athletic guys who can't play football and would rather we use mostly game tape for our evaluation.
Well, I mean, I think the days of overdrafting that these crazy athletic guys kind of left when Al Davis passed on. It's really more of just a reputation at this point. And every year, all the people who make their predictions still kind of make their predictions based on that kind of easy formula they used to do from years past. But, you know, I think there is a lot to be gleaned from the combine. I tend to watch it. I mean, I would suggest looking at specific events for specific positions because some events matter to certain positions and some not so much. You know, you can confirm things with the 40 time, but mostly for just positions like wide receiver and cornerback. I mean, you shouldn't really care too much about the 40 time of like offensive lineman or maybe interior defensive lineman so much. Although, of course, when one of them like a 300-pound guy or into sub five or something like that, you tend to, you know, ear perk up a little bit. But I mean, it's not that vital. I mean, it's the same for the vertical jump when you're talking about like the wide receivers and cornerbacks, and you're talking about if they have a lot of speed, it usually means they have some good leg strength, which means they can usually jump pretty high, and that's important as well. And likewise, you know, you're looking like the three cone is really good for judging running backs, and you can, if you'd like, you can judge linebackers the same way, you know, because it shows like lateral agility and stuff like that, speed, quickness. My favorite drill at the combine, one that I will watch multiple times, is the gauntlet drill. And that's where, for those who don't know, it's where the receivers, like, they'll turn one direction and catch a pass, and then jump and turn the other direction, catch a pass. And then they'll run in a straight line, turning to each side, catching a pass along the way. And it's not an easy drill. And it pretty much never fails that the draft's best receivers excel in that drill. And it's a tough drill. And the ones who make it look easy, they really stand out. And you can also tell the guys who struggle you can hear balls, you know, smack their hands as they come at them. And their movements are really jerky because they seem like they're a little panicked. They're not really like comfortable running that drill. And then there's the rare guys who just look like they can do it in their sleep. And those guys are the ones that really stand out in my mind when I watch that drill. I mean, things like that. So, I mean, like I said, Mike Mayock always, he's one of the announcers for the combine, and he won't be there this year, at least not his, what he has to say won't be public, but you can tell that he gets a lot from the combine as well. It's basically just, you mentioned the tape, you have to go back to the tape all the time because you don't want any like DHB type situations, but you can confirm things with what you see at the combine, and you're like, oh, he seemed like he was faster, you know, things like that. You know, basically it just kind of adds or takes away a little bit from what you already know about the prospects. Anyway, okay, so let's move on to the next one. Anglo Raider asks, regardless of whether we re-sign Cook or not, he's talking about Jared Cook, should we be looking to try and add TJ Hockenson with one of our later first round picks?
I'm inclined to say no, and it's not because TJ Hockenson isn't a great player. This is a very interesting draft in that there are two first round tight end prospects, and both of them are Iowa Hawkeyes. I don't think I've ever seen something like that before, the tight end position, where two guys come from one school and they're both first round draft picks. Almost certainly both of them will be taken on the first day. And I don't think so, just because the Raiders have so many needs on defense and also at wide receiver. And Jared Cook really isn't that old. And behind him, we have Lee Smith, and the Raiders have a guy like Derek Carrier, and there's even guys behind that who should get some playing time to show what they can do. The Raiders have so much need at the wide receiver spot. I mean, and there's several good wide receiver prospects in the first round. There's two guys from Ole Miss, A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf, and there's a guy from Arizona State, N'Keal Harry, who I'm really high on, and I would rather the Raiders take any one of those receivers over a tight end in the first round. You can get a tight end later if you really want some depth, but I think what the Raiders have at the tight end position might actually right now be one of their strongest positional groups. So I wouldn't look at Hockenson for the Raiders, but I definitely think he'll go in the top 20 for sure. And so will his teammate Noah Fant. He might go in the top 25. But I don't think the Raiders should look into that in the first round, no. Okay, so next question is for you. Levi Maru 26 asks, whose big board do you all think is the best to look at, and whose prospect rankings and breakdowns do you trust the most?
Well, Mike Mayock. He was a must every year, so it kind of sucks that we won't be seeing those anymore. In recent years, I really liked what Dane Brugler puts out. He used to be a CBS Sports and recently signed with The Athletic. What guys would you say you trust, Tyler?
Yeah, I've been reading Mayock's for a long time, and you know, I read the stuff on ESPN from Mel Kiper, you know, and all those guys. And I also look at Walter Football. He's a guy who runs a football website, and he publishes a mock draft basically every 3 days. And he's got a big board, and I've always found it very useful for research purposes. And when it comes down to it, he gets pretty accurate picks as far as who's going where. So I've always liked Walter, and I've always liked Mike Mayock as well.
Really, I mean, you can go a lot of different directions. I think Optimum Scouting has a pretty good big board, but really, what I would recommend is not taking any one draft analyst or publication's big board all by itself, not in a vacuum. You know, get a second opinion, a third, a fourth, fifth opinion, because sometimes they can vary greatly. You know, if you have to, and I've done this, make a spreadsheet, put several big boards side by side, compare them. I mean, hell, it's the off season. What else are you going to do? You know, talk to your family. Here we go. All right. So next up here, Tyler Raider 187 asks, will Derek Carr show improvement next year, and can he get back to winning football?
Well, those are two different questions entirely. Will Carr show improvement? Let's not forget that Carr was actually pretty darn good as far as his raw numbers from last season. Did he throw a bunch of interceptions? Yeah, he might have thrown a little more interceptions than we'd like to see. But he threw for a boatload of yards, and he threw for quite a few touchdowns as well. I mean, in a vacuum, Carr's numbers are not bad. The team was bad. So winning football was a different story. But let's also not forget that Derek Carr has had essentially a different offensive coordinator every single year that he's played. The Raiders have been in such flux as far as their coaching staff. Carr's had no consistency whatsoever. The only thing he's had in his career is a fairly decent offensive line almost every year. Maybe the first year, not so much. Maybe last year, as they had a lot of injuries that you know, dealt some blows to Carr's security. But as far as coaching and being in the same system year after year, not so much. So I'm definitely looking for improvement from Carr in as much as he's working with John Gruden for the second year in a row, and then he'll be in third year in a row, fourth year in a row, you know, God willing that he stays and that he doesn't trade it away. But I think he'll continue to get better and better and more comfortable. I mean, we've seen Drew Brees work with Sean Payton for so long, and they're essentially a well-oiled machine now. And when you have a talented coach with a good offensive system and a talented quarterback, and they grow together and they learn each other's tendencies and they learn what they can and cannot do, then it gets better and better and better, so long as the team doesn't completely crater. Now, the Raiders are going to have to improve their defense so that Carr isn't playing from behind all the time, because some of Carr's stats were garbage time. There's no question about that. We're not going to be dishonest here. But I just think that winning football is a little different than Carr improving. Winning football, you have to get a running game, you have to get an offensive line, and you have to improve your defense across the board. If you do that, what Derek Carr has already shown he can do is perfectly fine, and I think he'll continue to get better as well. So I'm going to go yes, and I'm gonna also say if they make some really good defensive draft picks and the guys they have continue to grow in Paul Gunther's defensive system, I'm going to go yes in the winning football as well. So the next question for you, Levi, is Yosemite Raider asks, how will the tackle positions look on week one?
Ah, that is the $22 million question. That's basically touches on something you just mentioned a moment ago, because that's $22 million is what Derek Carr is making this season, by the way. And if they don't get the tackle position figured out, they may as well just flush that cash down the toilet, because he can't really function without protection. If it were me, I wouldn't have started Colton Miller at left tackle in the first place. I would have stuck with Donald Penn at left tackle and let Miller play at right tackle for season before even considering moving him to left tackle, perhaps in the second season, or maybe even leaving him at right tackle and bringing in another left tackle. I mean, you give yourself a year, you see what he looks like, and then you make your decision then. And it gives you that flexibility to say, hey, should we bring a left tackle? Should we bring in a right tackle? Depending on where you want to play Colton Miller. And don't give me the injury stuff, because you can't predict that. And when I say the injury stuff, I mean to Donald Penn. I firmly believe that Penn switching from left tackle to right tackle suddenly for the first time in his career was the primary reason why he ended up getting injured again in the first place. But, you know, that being said, we can't go back in time. We can't change what he's done, what the decisions Gruden's made with the offensive line. And they didn't go that route. Instead, they put Miller left tackle and right from the start, which basically what that is the long play. And it suggests that they intend to keep him there next season as well. And, you know, and if he plays well, he could keep going at left tackle. If he doesn't, maybe they'll revisit it then. But he gave up 16 sacks for sure. And he looked very raw, but he did struggle with a knee injury that he suffered around about the same time earlier. I think it was week 4, as Osemele had suffered his injury. And that injury will certainly buy him some time. They'll buy him some slack as far as the coaching staff's judgment of his overall talent. They'll figure, you know, let's see what he can do when he's healthy. Brandon Parker, on the other hand, is another story. While Miller had the injury excuse, Parker was just flat out terrible. He didn't have the injury excuse. I think they'd be really smart to either sign a free agent to play right tackle or use one of their 4 picks in the top 35. And I would go with the former, because I believe there are some pretty decent potential right tackles that are going to be on the market. And you could bring in a guy. You could bring in a guy who would at very least provide competition with Parker for the job. And at most, he could jump in as a starter this season and perhaps beyond that. And then if Parker down the road, if he develops, they can give another shot at that time. But it would just be irresponsible to back themselves into a corner again with Parker as the only option without giving another guy a shot. All right, Tyler, next one's for you. Gabe Ruth asks, who's the one prize free agent you think the Raiders will land? And will free agents want to come to Oakland with the mess that has been going on?
Well, those are two different questions, and I can certainly address them both. The one free agent I think the Raiders will land is Jadeveon Clowney. I saw a video from NFL Total Access on NFL Network just 2 days ago, and Willie McGinnis was asked, who's the one free agent that really fits the Raiders? And he said, well, it's Jadeveon Clowney. They need an edge rushing, and Clowney is the best free agent for that. Clowney came out, and we talked about the combine. Jadeveon Clowney is a guy who absolutely destroyed the combine. I mean, he was an absolute physical marvel, a physical freak. He was what everyone thought he was going to be and more. And that solidified him at the top of that particular 2014 draft, even above a guy like Khalil Mack. And he came out and played and got injured and really wasn't that good. But in the last couple of seasons, he's grown into his potential. He's become more or less what everyone thought he should be. And he's just playing at a fantastic level right now. He's an elite edge rusher. He's a defensive end that everyone would want to have on their team. And that's the guy the Raiders should target. And I think they're going to have to get. If they want to really be competitive, they have to get the Jadeveon Clowney's of the world. And I think they'll get him. As far as wanting to come to Oakland, well, at this point, you're signing guys for Las Vegas because they're going to be there next year, regardless of where the Raiders play, whether it's Oakland, San Francisco, you know, Birmingham or the moon. It doesn't matter. These guys are signing 4 or 5 year deals, and the vast majority of it is going to be in a shiny new stadium on the Las Vegas Strip. So that's what guys are signing up for. They're signing up for no income tax. They're signing up for the Las Vegas life. They're signing up to play for the Las Vegas Raiders. And I think that's a very attractive option for a lot of guys who are on the market right now. Okay. So next question, the last question, in fact, is for you. 20 Crow asks, do you think any of the interior O-line starters are gone this offseason?
Well, if there's one player in there I could see potentially being moved, it's Kelechi Osemele. Not to say that they absolutely would, but you know Rodney Hudson's not going anywhere. He's kind of like the foundation of that offensive line. He's got a few years left on his contract. And Gabe Jackson was just re-signed last year, I think, to a long contract, and he's still young. So Osemele is due $10.2 million next year with no dead money left behind if he's cut. And his salary only goes up in 2020. And it would be a shame because his talents are kind of wasted. They've been kind of wasted the last two seasons with the switch to zone blocking, whether it's lateral zone or downhill zone or whatever they want to call it. And really, they should go back to what made him an all-pro in the first place. And the Raiders, one of the best lines in the league, instead of trying to, you know, cutting him or trading him or whatever they would possibly do. And, you know, with $70 million in cap room, there's really no reason why they should feel they need to start cutting his salary or anything like that. You know, they don't need to clear any space for the set to get into the salary cap or anything like that. But I would suggest keeping an eye on John Feliciano. He's headed for free agency. And if Feliciano resigned for cheaper, he's younger, and therefore his contract would start with the rebuild, while Assembly's contract will be up after 2020 when he turns 32. One will stay, the other will go. So that's something to keep an eye on. All right. I guess that's it.
Yeah, that's all the questions we have.
All right. Well, again, just awesome questions from the readers. Thank you. Gave us lots of stuff to sink our teeth into. I'd like to thank Tyler for hopping on with some of his draft insight and otherwise. I guess that's it for this Silver and Black Pridecast. Again, hope everybody had a great Valentine's Day and has an awesome off season. And we'll see you next time.